Mary Sterrett on True Talk 800 AM.
I'm Mary Sterrett. This afternoon, you're listening to True Talk 800 AM. We've spent an entire week talking about one issue. One issue whereby we take a look at something that is so horrific, you'd think it was happening in a third world country. We're talking about inmate issues, women inmate issues here in the state of Oregon. As we mentioned at the beginning of the week, we are one of only four states where custodial rape or rape of a female inmate by a Department of Corrections official is not officially against the law. I had a case where we had proof positive that this had happened in the year 1997 down at the Oregon Women's Correctional Center. A woman named Cindy talked to us, and she detailed a horrific abuse that went on for the greater part of a year. I'd been in touch with the Marion County DA's office, and I called and I said, "Hey, you guys, you're being apprised of a felony that occurred. I'll give you the guy's name, I'll tell you when it happened, and go get him." You know what? To date, nothing has happened. And I'm just wondering, if anyone except a state employee had been accused of being a serial rapist, imagine on a radio station coming out with this information, challenging the district attorney's office to do something about it. Can you imagine? Can this be anything but a cover-up? I suggest you call the district attorney's office in Marion County and ask for Steve Dingell. You can call the Marion County District Attorney's Office by calling 1-503-588-5222. You will be prompted. You might want to press 1. That's for reporting a felony. And ask them why this hasn't happened. Is there a massive cover-up going on? I think it's a challenge that the Marion County District Attorney's Office needs to hear. They need to hear from you. Right now, for those of you who have not heard the horror of what went on, and we know it most likely continues to go on. It's a new prison, $171 million prison in Wilsonville, Oregon. Has the change of location meant that this doesn't go on? Well, we don't know. But I want you to listen to what Cindy had to say about what happened to her.
When the assaults began, it was with, you know, you want to be with your family when you get out of prison, and you have a whole year that you can lose if you say anything. To this day, if things wouldn't have came out, I think part of me would have remained very silent just so I could get out of prison a year sooner. And he knew that was his weapon, that was his threat against me. Although we're incarcerated for whatever reason, it doesn't give anyone the right to abuse us, to hurt us, to assault us, to rape us. That's not part of our sentence. That's not part of the punishment. That's not okay. It's not okay in society, and it's not okay behind those prison walls. And that when you get out, it's there. It stays with you. I don't forget his face. And I don't forget what he did to me. And I don't forget what he took from me. And he was very close to taking my life. And I don't forget that.
All right, this guy, and I've got his name right in front of me. I'm not going to tell you what it is, but I've told the Marion County District Attorney's Office what his name is. You know this guy's still on the payroll? Yeah, he's still employed by the Department of Corrections. So if you'd like to express your outrage about this, you can call the district attorney's office at 1-503-588-5222. Ask for Steve Dingell and ask him, "What's up, Steve? Here you have, you know, we've got some pretty good evidence of a serial rape that went on in 1997 at the Oregon Women's Correction. Oh, it was just an inmate. Oh, that's right. Well, these people are, well, they don't really matter, do they?" All this week we talked about medical neglect. We talked about a variety of the things that are wrong in this state's prison. Right now, I want to talk about what can be done to remedy the situation. We're going to be spending some time this afternoon talking about what is being done to help women make the transition. Joining us now is a woman who's going to be coming to Portland October 5th and 6th. She'll be speaking at Portland State University. She has a PhD. She's written a number of books, and she presents something called Women Empowerment and Overcoming Addiction. She's the author of something called the 16-Step Program, which is sort of contrary to the, or in addition to the 12-Step Program. And she's an expert on addictions and women. Dr. Charlotte Castle, nice to have you here this afternoon.
Thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here.
You are very conversant with women's problems, women's issues, and have put together something called the 16-Step Program. Why does this have to be a different recovery program when women are involved?
Well, when I started doing therapy like 25 years ago, a women's therapy collective, woman after woman came in who had been battered, abused, assaulted, had incest histories, and it seemed to me there were some pieces missing. For instance, an affirmation of one's power to take charge of one's life, an affirmation that those were wrong things someone did to you. A lot of women were sort of using those in their fifth steps, you know, which is your own moral inventory, as opposed to saying, no, someone harmed me and that was wrong. And a lot of women were being told in treatment programs, oh, that's blaming, you shouldn't do that. But blame is a lot different than naming assault and the truth. And it seems like there wasn't the strength in there to give women a strong ego strength. It's kind of was designed to break down the ego, but it was designed mostly for privileged white men who needed to can have their ego broken down. But women needed to name their pain and stand up for themselves.
So is addiction a big problem in prison?
Oh, of course. I mean, there's so much, it was women, so much of the addiction, there's many levels of it. There's the codependency addiction, which means the addiction to a person, and you go along with somebody else and do something to keep them with you that you know is wrong, but you don't have the strength to say no.
And sometimes that lands them in prison because they're hanging around with the bad boys.
That's right. Or they'll go and cover for them or drive away or do the drugs or do the deal itself. And then, of course, there's often, almost always, a history of incest and abuse of some sort, of very chaotic homes to start out with. There's usually a history of, a lot of chaos in life and lack of privilege, and then drug dependency of one sort or another are very, very, very common.
So then if we take these women and we throw them in prison and we throw away the key, have we really accomplished anything?
We've done nothing. Because the point is, these are our sisters. These are part of society. You know, we can't make anyone else the other. We're all in this together. And if people are hurting and they don't get child care, and it's getting worse. I mean, funding for children is getting worse and worse. You know, to support the mother, to support her working, to give her skills, parenting skills, child care, all these kinds of things, the safety nets. It's just being ripped out from under people in this culture.
But there are people, Charlotte, who are going to say, look, you did the crime, you need to do the time.
Well, it's pretty simple-minded. You know, it's like, it's real easy to stand out there and point. You know, there's a Native American saying, you know, don't ever condemn another person until you've walked a mile in their moccasins. And, you know, it's really true. I don't think some people have a clue what it's like growing up in some of these addictive, chaotic houses, of being traumatized and terrorized as a child, of having no sense of inner safety. That's why you hook up with whoever. I don't think they know what they're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So because, you know, mercy and compassion. Now, it's interesting, people will say they're Christian. Well, if you go to the real heart of Christianity, way beyond all the fundamentalism and everything, mercy, compassion, and love. Yeah.
Well, one of the things that I have in front of me is a verse from Matthew that says, you know, I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink.
Right,
and
I was in prison.
And I was in prison and you came to visit me, and I wondered, yeah, how many Christians will look at that and go, it doesn't mean me, I'm not going to prison. Those are icky places.
Well, and you know, they're places we've all had a part in creating.
Mm-hmm.
Because when we don't take care of all of us, you know, we're a family. We're all sisters and brothers here. If we don't take care of all of us, then some of us hurt a lot. And I really believe that at some very deep level, the quality of the life for any of us is no better at some level than It is for the least of us.
Well, the least of us, that's absolutely right. What did we do? And you really can't get any more least than the people that we warehouse in prison.
That's right.
And so, yeah, I would. It's a challenge to Christians and to non-Christians and everybody else in between to say, wait a second, it's just too easy for us to look at these people and point a finger and to lay blame and to say, no, you're a different, you're subhuman. Tell me, if you can, Charlotte, about the success rate of your 16-step program. Does it work?
Well, it's worked for a lot of people. And I actually, very early on, a friend of mine who runs the Light Space in Columbus, Ohio, who has done a lot of work in prisons, took the model in and worked with the women. And a woman wrote to me, and I was writing the book on it at the time, and I sent her the steps, the first of which says, we affirm we have the power to take charge of our lives and stop being dependent on substances or other people for our self-esteem and security. And she wrote back and said, you know, no one has ever told me that I had power. I have never heard anyone affirm that I can do this, that I have power, and that I have inner resources. So it's really focused on building inner resources, finding, you know, it affirms your strength, your intelligence, your perceptions, all these things to really resonate deeply inside yourself, kind of find the power inside of you.
Well, Dr. Castle, I certainly appreciate your joining us this afternoon and want to encourage people. You're going to be in Portland, as I said, the 5th and 6th. You'll be speaking at Portland State University, and this is sponsored in part by Women Embracing Freedom Together, and we'll talk about that later on in the program. Thanks so much for being with us this afternoon.
Well, thank you.
All righty, take care. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, I want to talk to a woman in New York City who belongs to an organization which was started in 1844, a group that deals with women's prison issues. We've got an awful lot to learn from them. You're listening to True Talk 800 AM. I'm Mary Sterrett. It's 2:15. Glad you're along this afternoon. We'll be right back.
When your child is hurting, all you want to do is make them better.
I went to Dr. Bob for my grandson, Kaylee, who is now 10, because Kaylee was having headaches, and I'd had his eyes checked, and there was nothing wrong. He also was having stomach aches, he was having diarrhea, he was having trouble with mood swings. He would get really upset about things and couldn't settle down. And I just wanted to take the first step by going to see Dr. Bob first. And he did all the complete workup on that and found that he was allergic to several compounds. And we started him on the allergy stuff, and he's been doing great. And it really is. It's 180 degrees. This little boy is happy again. He can deal with life now. He doesn't have stomach aches anymore. He doesn't have headaches anymore.
If your child doesn't know the joy of just being well, call Dr. Bob Sklosky now at 654-3938. Because making your child well is all that matters. Dr. Bob Sklosky, naturopathic physician, 654-3938. 654-3938.
It's a new little boy. He gained a new lease on life.
Bible teaching and family programs in the morning and the best in conservative talk radio all day. True Talk, 800 AM.
Listen to one story of the many Christians in China, Indonesia, and Southeast Asia being persecuted right now.
A Christian leader in Jiangsu province was sentenced to prison where he was forced to drink liquid salt and urine. He was also forced to stand half naked in the hot sun all day on top of a pile of manure where mosquitoes swarmed around him.
Amazingly, persecuted believers tell us what they want most is Bible. But there is a serious Bible shortage.
It costs just $4 to send a Bible. And right now, a matching grant will double any gift you give. That means your gift of $40 will send 20 Bibles to believers who are praying for their own copy of God's Word. Call the Bible League now, toll free at 1-800-YES-WORD, and pledge your Bible-sharing gift today. 1-800-YES-WORD. That's 1-800-YES-WORD.
Turn it up in Portland. Mary Sterrett, True Talk, 800 AM.
Take your purple, go light your world. Take your candle, go light your world.
All this week we've talked about some of the horrific situations that are occurring in the women's prison here in Oregon, and we recount that, and we want to remind you, and make it, you know, ever present in your mind that we are one of four states where there is no law against a state employee raping a female inmate. And that is one of the most horrific truths that I would like to bring home time and time again. I do believe that there's an awful lot we've got to learn in this state about how we treat not only the female inmates, but the male inmates. Welcome back here on True Talk 800. I'm Mary Starrett. And while we spent all week talking about what's wrong, I want to talk about what we can do to make things right. Joining us now is Julie Cowart. She's the director of Women in Prison Project, and that is part of the Correctional Association of New York, which was founded in 1844. They've got a lot to teach us. Julie, thanks for being with us.
Sure.
We have terrible situations, medical neglect, and all kinds of violations against, I believe, humanity here going on at our women's prison. And I was just wondering if maybe you could teach us a few things from an organization that's been around for a long time.
Well, I think that the first thing that you've got to do when you have a problem like women in prison, which is, you know, basically a constituency without a lot of power, that is invisible but doesn't have a lot of economic clout, obviously, is to do what we did here in New York when this project was first started in 1991. And that is, it was very helpful for us to start what is called the Coalition for Women Prisoners. And the Coalition is an alliance, it's a statewide alliance, actually, from groups all over the state of drug treatment providers, other social service providers, attorneys, alternative to incarceration providers, clergy, former prisoners, concerned citizens, and together as a group, to begin to come up with an advocacy agenda and to advocate together on behalf of women in prison.
This organization, I look at the founding date of the Correctional Association of New York back in 1844, and I think, boy, that's going back a long way. There were actually people concerned about prisoners in New York then?
Yeah, there were. It was sort of good government types way back then who were concerned about conditions primarily, and at that point, I think the women's prisons were actually women's reformatories, the kinds of places where they taught women to iron and, you know, keep house, and that was sort of the prison programming for women.
So we'd all be in those, wouldn't we?
Yeah.
I haven't picked up an iron in a long time.
So what this group started was a campaign to visit the prisons, to be an outside monitor, and in 1846, they got a mandate from the state to become sort of a prison watchdog, and we've retained that mandate, and we're one of the only two organizations in the country, actually, that are not-for-profits outside of government that are allowed to visit any prison we want, and then we report our findings back to the government and to the public generally. Now, how one would go about setting something like that up in a state now, you know, we're looking at 2002, is an interesting dilemma, but that might be a good place to start, because part of the problem with prisons is that prisoners are invisible. Mm-hmm. The public isn't allowed in. No one really knows what's going on in there, and no outside eyes are seeing the dark corners of the prison, and no one inside really knows unless they have family members, and obviously family members care, but don't really know that the public actually cares, or at least some constituency in the public cares.
Yeah, that's the problem. Is that these are not people who have much of a voice because, as you mentioned, they don't have a whole lot of clout. What is a universal problem, whether it's New York or Oregon or any state in between? What's a universal problem in women's prisons?
Well, there are many. One universal problem is that the main reason that women go to prison, and this I think is true nationwide, is for nonviolent offenses, primarily drug offenses, and so I would think actually the first problem women have nationwide with respect to incarceration is that they shouldn't be incarcerated in the first place. They should be diverted to treatment. And that is kind of the plank of most prison advocacy groups across the country, first and foremost, is to divert nonviolent offenders. And again, women are almost exclusively nonviolent offenders. There are women violent offenders, but not many. To divert those women to drug treatment programs, basically, because the problems that come from women going to prison are vast. It's a very big web. When you think about the fact that women are primary caretakers of children, and when they go to prison, very often their children go into foster care. and that breaks up the family. And then you have the whole foster care system that you're contending with and the effects on that child and the increased rates of truancy and depression and other things that we see in any child that's separated from their parent abruptly, as when they go to prison. So I would say that's the first thing, is more resources for drug treatment. It's actually sort of a front end rather than what's happening in prison. And then I would say in terms of conditions, I mean, you know, sexual harassment is a huge issue. And I think you were mentioning that a little bit earlier. Even in a state like ours, where we do have a statute criminalizing sexual contact between correction officers and actually civilian staff and inmates, and it's gender neutral, you know, it's men or women,
mm-hmm.
The issue then becomes enforcement. And is a local district attorney, very many of whom, at least in this state, are elected, and who are their constituent base? Well, their constituent base, if they're in a prison town, are correction officers. So is the district attorney, even when you have a criminal statute, going to enforce it? Going to enforce it in such a way that it actually has an impact?
Well, you know, it's interesting that you bring that up, because I had information about one particular inmate who was raped on numerous occasions in 1997 at the Oregon Women's Correctional Center. I have his name, and I have information from this inmate. I've called the Marion County District Attorney's Office on a number of occasions to alert them to this felony, and I've yet to hear anything back. I had a listener who pointed out, if you got on any commercial radio station and said, I know of I know where the rapist is, he's still a Department of Corrections employee, if I gave you that information and I talked about that on the air, wouldn't this guy be arrested the same day? How many men are in prison based on the victim's hearsay alone? And here we have proof, and is it because, as you just mentioned, who the constituency is, and you've got one state department covering for another state department?
Well, one of the other issues there is how independent is, for example, the investigator who works with the Department of Correctional Services. I mean, in our state, and this is legislation that my coalition is going to propose this year to change, but in our state, the inspector general who inspects, obviously, issues of inmate, of brutality, et cetera, misconduct on the part of officers, is part of the Department of Correctional Services.
Mm-hmm.
So do the cases even get to the DA when they're first being investigated by somebody internal who, again, has even more of an interest in protecting the officers? The other issue, and, you know, we've met with some of the DAs in this state to talk about the problem and to say, why are you not enforcing this law? I mean, you know, sometimes they have DNA evidence. You know, they actually have evidence, so they know, and it matches the correction officer. So there's only one way that this woman could have gotten a hold of it, right? And they still don't prosecute, or they just allow them to resign. And the reason partly is that district attorneys don't think they can win these cases, even getting beyond whether a grand jury will charge an officer with sexual assault or rape, depending on what the statute in a particular state, how it defines the crime. But then the question is, can they ever get a jury to convict? That's their other concern.
Do we typically look at the female inmate and blame her?
Well, I can tell you that in New York, one of the CO handbook, CO is a shorthand for correction officer, the correction officer handbook talks about how, literally in black and white, how women inmates are more manipulative. Women inmates will try to get to you emotionally, you know, and that's the take on women. You know, they'll try to talk at you. Male inmates will hit you if they're angry at you. Women inmates will do this insidious female thing they do, you know, work their womanly wiles. So, yes, I do think very often, and even again, in a state where we have a criminal statute, the attitude of the prison administration is that the women are leading the COs down the road to ruin.
You know, in this state, what they do, what the procedure is that if a woman alleges any kind of sexual assault, she is handcuffed. She's put in segregation while they do an investigation. Is this not to be believed?
Well, you know, Amnesty International has a pretty fascinating report, which I don't know if you've seen.
Yeah.
And again, there are two, actually, not part of my sentence. And then there's a newer one, Abuse of Women in Custody. And it talks about shackling during pregnancy, which is something we don't, as a general matter, do in New York anymore. And also about sexual assault. And in many states, the criminal statutes that are on the books preventing this kind of CO inmate sexual contact do penalize the woman. She can actually get a criminal conviction. So an Amnesty study shows in all the 50 states what are the laws, good, bad, or indifferent. So it does not surprise me, unfortunately, that Oregon treats these sorts of complaints that way.
So where do we have to begin? How do we move forward?
Well, I think you need to find a way to talk to women prisoners, either former prisoners who've come out, who can educate advocates about how things really work on the inside. See if there is a way that you can get, that citizens can get some sort of inspecting role to get into the prisons and see what's happening. And again, starting to form a coalition of groups and individuals that care about what's happening with women prisoners. Because again, when you speak with a unified voice and with voices from very many parts of our culture, I think you then stand a much greater chance of having your legislature, your city councils that deal with the city jails, stand up and take notice. I think one lone voice won't do it. But when you amass those resources together, I think you stand a much better chance.
Well, I appreciate your joining us this afternoon, Julie. I know that you've got a lot going on, but as the director of Women in Prison Project for the Correctional Association of New York, we can learn a lot from you, and I appreciate your time.
Oh, thank you.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
We're going to break here and then come back and find out what programs are available for women in prison. We're also going to get out that number for the Marion County District Attorney's Office if you'd like to call them and say, hey, what's up? The number is 503-588-5222. We're going to talk later on in the program to a woman who will join us from Mississippi, where they're having a little tropical storm now. She's going to tell us why she changed her name as part of a prison advocacy project. She changed her name to that of an inmate. We'll be right back. Stay with us here on True Talk 800 AM. I'm Mary Barrett.
Hi, this is Greg Andringa, General Manager of Ronkonkoma Nissan, and we are pleased to announce the grand opening of Ronkonkoma Nissan Certified Pre-Owned Outlet Store. This is a place where every vehicle will come with a warranty. You buy a 1995 Ford pickup, it has a warranty. You buy a 1991 Honda Accord, it comes with a warranty. Here's a great example of the included warranties. A 2001 Nissan Maxima certified through Nissan will come with a factory warranty for 72 months and 100,000 miles from inception date. And the great thing is this, there's no additional cost to you. There will be hundreds of vehicles available, and all vehicles have gone through a complete vehicle inspection. And you'll have the confidence of knowing that you have purchased a quality automobile. You can contact our trained sales staff at 503-788-6789. That number again is 788-6789. Ronkonkoma Nissan Certified Pre-Owned Outlet is located just one block south of Powell on 82nd Avenue. So come on down and see us, or call 788-6789.
True Talk. Listen for In Touch with Charles Stanley weeknights at 9:30 on True Talk 800 AM.
If you're overweight, you're not alone. Do something about it. Introducing Slim Patch, a great new weight loss product from Europe. Slim Patch is totally natural. You eat as you normally do, but with Slim Patch, you'll feel full sooner and avoid cravings between meals. Slim Patch is easy to use. Just apply one patch per day until you reach your goal. No pills, no shakes, no problems. It works. You'll see results in your first week. How does it work? It absorbs through the skin and gives you the sensation of being full. You eat less, you lose weight. No one needs to know you're using Slim Patch. No hiding your shake in the back of the fridge or gulping your pills down before lunch. Apply Slim Patch to a discreet part of your body and start losing weight right away. Don't wait any longer. Now is the time to get on the right track.
Call 888-55-PATCH. Ask how to receive a 30-day supply absolutely free with your order. Call toll-free 1-888-557-2824. Lose 12 to 20 pounds this month at 1-888-55-PATCH. That's 1-888-55-PATCH.
Talk radio with a difference. Mary Starrett. True Talk 800 AM.
Welcome back. I'm Mary Starrett. You're listening to True Talk 800 AM. All this week, we've been talking about inmate issues. We're talking about what's going on at the Coffee Creek Correctional Facility. We talked about Oregon Women's Correctional Facility down in Salem, and wanted to talk this afternoon about the programs that are available for women. Wanted to talk about what can be done while they're in prison, and then later on in the show we'll talk about a transition, and also how you can get involved. You've heard about what's wrong there. Now we'll find out how we can make it right. I found out, got some information, that there was a study of Washington State prisoners that earned an associate's degree while they were in prison and found that their recidivism rate after 3 years was 6%. Now, contrast that to the fact that all other prisoners who don't wind up getting advanced degrees or associate's degrees or something like that while they're in prison wind up, their recidivism rate is 35%. So 6% compared to 35%. So basically, having an associate's degree made a person one-sixth as likely to go back to prison within 3 years. All you have to do is look at the Oregon Department of Corrections website and see that the recidivism rate in Oregon for prisoners within 3 years of release is about 30%. Now, if you look at this Washington study, we could reduce our recidivism rate to 5% if inmates are given an opportunity to earn an associate's degree. I wanted to find out just what programs were available for women at the Coffee Creek Correctional Facility, which, as we mentioned, it's the women's prison, the only women's facility for the state. It's in Wilsonville, Oregon. It cost $171 million to build, and we have about 672 women inmates housed there. Now, this is not including the women who are incarcerated in county jails. Joining us now is Greg Reed. He is the minimum facility manager for Coffee Creek Correctional Facility. Mr. Reed, nice to have you with us.
Thank you.
Can you tell me a little bit about the educational opportunities that are offered for women at our Oregon prison?
Currently, we have a general education degree program for inmates to acquire their GED, high school diploma. In addition to that, we have adult basic education, which helps them with reading skills, literacy skills. We also have some computer destination labs, which provides opportunities for the females to learn computer skills, which are, as you know, are very important now, for especially for people who have been out of the community for 3 years or longer.
But what about, as we mentioned, we looked at some pretty startling statistics about just getting an associate's degree. In other words, something a little more advanced than a GED or adult basic reading skills.
The Oregon citizens and the Oregon Department of Corrections do not at this time and have not for several years provided a college education for inmates. We have had inmates request to take courses through the mail, and that has been approved on a case-by-case basis, but very few.
Because I'm looking at what it costs to house an inmate here in Oregon. It's about $23,000. It seems to me that it would be cost-effective to provide, you know, that advanced degree opportunity would be a whole lot cheaper than housing an inmate, especially when you look at what the recidivism rate is. They're much less likely to come back to prison if they've got that.
Well, I believe that the reality is that anybody given an opportunity to better themselves in education, work-based education, or through treatment and programming does stand a better chance.
Mm-hmm.
Our funds basically are spread fairly thin, and right now we offer, like I said, the ABGED. We have several work-based education programs. We offer hair design classes, and through cosmetology, which after 2 years, inmates acquire a license in cosmetology. Also have a eyeglass recycling program here through the institution that allows the inmates to get certified as, I believe the title is dispensing optometrists, but we do not have associate's degrees or college degrees here.
Hmm. Give me an example of what other programs are available.
We have two work crews for our minimum facility.
And what does that mean? What do they do?
Okay, we have two crews. One goes out to Oregon State Parks, does parks maintenance. And we have a second crew that goes out with the Oregon Department of Transportation helping clean up highways. We have, I've already talked about computer technology. We have a Department of Motor Vehicles call center in our medium where approximately 35 inmates are currently handling calls to free up state employees for other access to a large savings of money to the taxpayer.
So when we call the DMV, chances are we're getting a woman answering down at the prison in Wilsonville.
You may very well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What else? What else
also,
do you offer?
We have a print shop here on site that provides printing for the state of Oregon. We have an organic gardening program here on site, which provides food for our kitchen area. Example, some of the stuff they're doing in addition to just the food, they're providing some pumpkins for some of our parenting program here this month, and we'll be using the pumpkins afterwards for inmates to eat in the kitchen. We have sewing program here at the facility where inmates make inmate clothing and other items. We also have the general institutional work, which keeps the institution running. We have inmates working in our kitchens as orderlies. They do the landscaping, the maintenance work for us. And in addition to that, we have programs. We have cognitive-based programs, breaking barriers, thinking for change, alcohol and drug education workshops, alcohol and drug treatment. We have two treatment programs here that house 54 inmates each. And one is called Turning Point, and the other one is In Focus. We have another group called Many Roads, One Journey, which is a group of citizens who are here volunteering for us, and they bring the program into our population twice a week. We also have mental health programs, both a crisis management program, self-help programs, HIV, Hep C, both pre- and post-test counseling, risk reduction classes.
Well, what do these things mean, Greg? Because I don't understand, you know, what they are. Give us a little bit more, fluff them out a little more if you could.
Okay. Well, let me move on. We have Girl Scouts who come into the institution twice a month.
And I read that in the newspaper. They're actually coming in. Are they coming to just see their family members, or are they coming, other Girl Scouts coming in as well?
Actually, we have a Girl Scout troop in the San Diego area that comes in twice a month. They come in, the Girl Scout instructor comes in during the week, meets with the parents, and plans a Girl Scout meeting. Then on the following Saturday morning, their children, they come up by bus, and this is all funded by Girl Scouts. And they come up by bus, and they have an actual Girl Scout meeting here at the institution twice a month with their parents. And they are, after the Girl Scouts meeting, they actually sit down, have a hot meal with their mothers, and then at the end of the day, they go on home. And during the following week, they have a Girl Scouts meeting with other girls out on the street or on the outside with other girls that are citizens and do not have parents inside. So basically, they don't get stigmatized and mm-hmm. believe that this is normal and that they have to go to prison to have Girl Scouts.
What does this do for both the incarcerated moms and the kids?
Well, currently, females are the largest growing population in inmate institutions, and 78%, according to ACLU, of our female inmates have children. So we're dealing with the children at this institution primarily because they're the citizens that are going to be on the street tomorrow. They're the ones that are going to affect our children and our family. And after you've been in prison and worked in prisons for a period of time, you begin to notice that multi-generational type of trends that go on in facilities. We have one woman here whose mother and grandmother have both been in prison.
Mm. What do you think is the reason behind that?
Generally, they don't learn the life skills within a dysfunctional family. And from that dysfunctional family, you have dysfunctional parents come later.
Yeah, that's so tragic. I saw this picture in the paper of this one woman being visited by her Girl Scout daughter. It just broke my heart to think that this young girl had to go see her mom in prison, what that must be like for her. It must be really difficult.
Yeah. Most of these people, like I say, grow up in dysfunctional relationships. They don't have positive role models or relationships modeled to them by adults.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes they even begin to internalize the blame for that to themselves. We try and provide programs which allow them to learn these positive relationship skills and maybe recognize some of the negative consequences resulting from those unhealthy relationships.
My understanding is, my understanding is that every inmate in the women's prison has to work part of a state mandate. Is that right?
Yeah. Measure 17 requires that all inmates work, quote unquote, work a minimum of 40 hours per week. Now, 20 hours of that by statute can actually be involved in programming. So someone could work a combination of 20 hours a week and be in program 20 hours a week and meet that mandate.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone here, and I believe that today we're at approximately 95 90 to 95% compliant with that, this institution.
All righty. Well, I do appreciate your time this afternoon, Greg. I appreciate the information. Thank you so much for being with us.
Okay, take care.
All right. Bye-bye. I want to talk again a little bit about the educational opportunities and that Washington State study that said that if the inmates have earned at least an associate's degree while in prison, their recidivism rate after 3 years was only 6%. Compare that to other prisoners who had a recidivism rate, a reoffending rate, I guess we should say, of 35%. So again, the statistics show that a person would be one-sixth as likely to go back to prison if they had something like a two-year associate's degree. So now we look at the Oregon statistics, where 95% of all prisoners are eventually released from prison, and the average prison term is, what, 36, 37 months. So the best investment we could make would be to reduce our budget and to establish these programs in the prison where you could get a two-year degree. It seems that we would reduce not only the prison population, but our budget. So we have to ask why. Based on statistics where we can just simply go up to Washington State and extrapolate those, why would we not want to cut our budget? We could cut it by a quarter. We're screaming and yelling and belly aching about how much money we don't have. They're now looking at building two more prisons, one in Madras, one in Lakeview, floating this cook-in-the-books fake kind of accounting to come up with the money to do that, and building more prisons and building more prisons, unless the idea is to fill the prisons and keep them filled. I'm just, after all of this information, it all shakes down. This is the only thing I can come up with. Anyhow, we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, what Christian ministry programs are available for women at Coffee Creek Correctional Facility in Wilsonville? We'll find out when we come back. We'll talk to the chaplain there. Here on True Talk 800 AM, I'm Mary Starrett. We have more True Talk on the way. And at True Talk, we are gearing up for Operation Overcoat, and you can help by providing warmth and comfort to homeless children, women, and men this winter. The spring winter clothing like jackets, sweaters, or pants, and personal hygiene items like soap, toothpaste, and toothbrushes to any Portland area Christian supply store and drop them in the Union Gospel Mission donation box. For more information, contact the Union Gospel Mission at 503-274-GIVE. That's 503-274-GIVE.
So, have you given any more thought to increasing your RQ?
Now, look, not that I don't do okay in that department myself. It had occurred to me, you know, if I were to make a little trip out.
A little trip up the Appliance Center at Northwest Natural Gas on 8th Avenue between Division and Powell to check out the 28 different gas fireplaces actually in operation is the perfect way to increase your RQ.
Romantic quotient?
Yes.
You say those gas fireplaces have the same impact as a romantic cruise?
Hey, that's it. Plus, not only does the Appliance Center at Northwest Natural Gas have 28 working fireplaces on display and all sorts of inserts and gas logs, Lanny has the most knowledgeable customer service people in the business, and the best installers, too. But they do get busy around this time of year, so if you're going to up the old RQ...
Yeah. Go out to the Appliance Center at Northwest Natural Gas on 8th Avenue between Division and Powell.
True Talk. Listen for Dr. Steve, weekdays 11 a.m. till noon on True Talk 800 a.m.
Christian Supply and Focus on the Family join McCord's Vancouver Toyota, Multnomah Bible College and Seminary, and KPDQ and a special invitation to pastors. All clergy are invited to a morning of celebration Friday, October 4th at New Hope Community Church. It'll be a time of relaxation and reflection, and you'll share experiences with your fellow pastors. For one morning, let us serve you. Being a pastor in today's world is substantially different than it was even 5 years ago. Yet most pastors love what they do, the God they represent, and the people they serve. You can help by keeping your pastor in your prayers, and even plan a special appreciation service during your normal worship time in October. If you're a member of the clergy, mark your calendar for October 4th and call 719-268-4829 to make your reservation to join us at the Clergy Appreciation Breakfast. It starts at 8:30 a.m. at New Hope Community Church, 11731 Southeast Stevens Road in Portland. Let us serve you, and remember, you are appreciated.
Not for the faint of heart, The Mary Starrett Show, True Talk, 800 a.m.
guilty of having disdain for inmates, for female inmates. I'd like to change all that, and perhaps we can all take some information that we've learned this week and find out what our own prejudice have been regarding inmates, male or female. Welcome back. I'm Mary Starrett, and you're listening to True Talk 800 AM. I've spent the last 4 days talking about what's wrong in the women's prison. I want to talk about what we can do to fix it. And maybe I can't fix it by myself, and maybe you can't fix it by yourself, but I'd like to think when all is said and done, we're going to be able to say, you know, I did something to ameliorate the suffering of one person, just one person who perhaps had no one to speak for her. And I think as Christians, we have the mandate. We're told that we're supposed to visit people in prison. Yeah, these are the least of us. And it might not be something you have ever thought of doing. But I got to tell you, having been there and done that, there's nothing more infuriating, I have to tell you, than leaving the prison and hearing that clanking gate behind you. Nothing more infuriating than hearing about the conditions and some of the things that go on. But there is nothing more empowering than knowing that you have connected with a woman who has nobody else to visit her, nobody else to write to her, nobody else to give a rip about whether she lives or dies or sees her next meal. Anyhow, I want to tell you what spiritual type of encouragement is going on at the Coffee Creek Correctional Facility. And to do that, we have with us the chaplain, one of the chaplains there, Arnadine Bean. Chaplain Bean, nice to have you here this afternoon.
Thank you.
How much does the spiritual encouragement component factor into an inmate's life?
It can factor in heavily, and that's the case for some women. But in some women's cases, it's not important to them.
So what do they have at their disposal spiritually?
We have an offering of many, many different religious services and activities. And, for example, we have the traditional religious services or Bible studies from groups like the Jehovah's Witnesses, the Catholics, Seventh-day Adventists, and many others. And then we also have different groups that are made up of people from different traditions, mostly Christian. For example, a group called FITS, or Fellowship in the Sun, or Prison Fellowship. There's several of those groups as well. And some of these groups bring in Christian music bands. We're going to have a Native American dance troupe come in. Apparently it's a Christian group. And then we also have the Native American traditional ceremonies for the women who would like to participate in those.
Tell me about some of these religious services. How often, how much goes on?
Well, we have something every day. And on Sundays and Saturdays, they're the heaviest as far as services because our women work or go to school most of the week. So we can have something in the evenings, but we can't have everything. I mean, if we have something during the day, not many women can get to them. So on Sundays, we have about 5 or 6 different services going on. And they don't take they can take place at the same time because different women go to different services. Saturday we have, for example, this Saturday we're going to have a choir that's directed by 2 Holy Name sisters. And then we have a Buddhist meditation group. And these 2 volunteers, I think, both come from Salem. Then we have a Living Enrichment Center, which is just down the street from Coffee Creek. They come in every Saturday and do an hour and a half service with women. And in the evening we have Seventh-day Adventists for both treatment women and for the general population women. We're supposed to have divided services for the treatment women and the general population women.
Just how many women are involved in any kind of spiritual journey?
Out of our 360 women in minimum?
Well, you've got 672 women in there. How many of them go to services or have some counseling or do Bible study or go to a Buddhist thing?
Meditation. I don't know how many from the medium because I supervise the minimum. Security, and we have about 360 women in that section. And I say during the month, there are probably about 900 women who go to services, but they could have gone, they could have repeated. That's approximately what it is right now. If that, does that make sense?
Well, no. Go back and explain how 300 gets into 900 and was never good at math.
If a woman goes every week, then that would be four times during the month, and we count how many times. We have to keep records. So
that's four. So that's basically
that
four.
That would be four for that
okay.
one woman.
I see. Is there any kind of effort, any kind of outreach? You, on my assumption, is a Christian chaplain. Any kind of outreach to the women to go in and to try to make an effort to reach them? Or do you have people like the Buddhists and the Native Americans and the Jehovah's Witnesses all vying for the same population?
If they can, the women have to ask for the kind of service that they want. So if a woman, for example, the Jehovah's Witnesses, a couple of women asked me if I would invite some Jehovah Witness people come in, and I did. If people don't ask for a service, then we don't ask them to come in.
Do you know, breaking it down, you've got the Christians, you've got the Latter-day Saints, you've got Mormons, you've got Jehovah's Witnesses, the Buddhists, the Native American. Do you ever break it down by percentage and see who's going where or what group is getting the most bodies?
Mostly Christian, if that's what you mean. The women definitely go to more Christian services than they do to the others, and I have to really try and be careful that the other religious traditions get equal time.
Now, what do you mean by that?
I mean that, for example, it's been hard to get enough Native American volunteers to come in, and so those women usually have one service a month. One ceremony a month, whereas the Catholics and the ones that we hear about the most have them at least weekly.
Okay.
Latter-day Saints are very, very faithful, coming in once a week, and most of the groups come in once a week.
Mm-hmm. What do you do? What's the average day in the life of a prison chaplain at the women's facility?
One thing is a lot of paperwork. That really seems overwhelming sometimes. And lots of work on the computer because in order to keep in contact with all the other chaplains in Oregon and the staff people, the computer is used a lot instead of the phone and the email is used a lot. The thing that I probably get in contact with the women most touchingly is around death, because the chaplain is usually the person who tells the women if someone died in their family. And there's quite a bit of that because we have so many women. And in fact, a week ago Saturday, we had six people all on the same day hear that somebody important in their life had died.
Mm-hmm.
And something happens when the women are at that point in their lives when they lose someone. And that's when I find I get to know the women who don't come to the services, that I can make a contact there, and sometimes that lasts.
Can you actually, are you allowed to lobby for a Christian perspective?
I don't lobby, but the women know that I'm a Christian, and I try to be equally open to all the services. I try not to lay my personal tradition on other people.
Not to be confrontational, but isn't that what the Great Commission is, that we're supposed to lay our personal our personal spiritual thing on other people?
I think I do that by my actions.
Mm-hmm.
And if the women ask me, I speak it out also.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that I think that my being a loving person and supporting people where they are, according to their lights, I think that's my way of being Christian.
Hmm.
And, yes, they know what religion I am,
uh-huh.
and if they want to talk about it, I'm always willing.
All right. Well, thanks so much for being with us.
You're welcome.
You've got a rough job, so God bless you in your work.
Thank you, Mary.
Chaplain Bean, thanks so much. We're going to take a short break and continue our discussion this afternoon. You're listening to True Talk 800 AM. When we come back, a woman who joins us from Mississippi, hopefully the tropical storm hasn't wiped out her phone line, she changed her name to that of a male inmate so she would have, well, I'll let her tell the story when we come back. Amazing story about what one person can do to affect change. That's here on True Talk. Do stay with us.
Are teenagers really lazy and apathetic, or are they simply bored?
This is Wisdom Works with youth culture specialist Mark Matlock.
Today's generation of teens comprehends boredom like no one else. With access to endless activities, entertainment, and education, they still can't find anything that interests them. I believe one reason stems from our failure to give teens a challenge and purpose that inspires them. The body of Christ is supposed to strengthen believers in spirit and in truth. For what? So that they can accomplish the incredible mission that God has called us to pursue. And what is our mission? The world itself. Something much too big, grand, and complex for any one of us to handle without the Lord's help. True, it might seem overwhelming at times, but believe me, it's never boring.
To find out about Mark Matlock's Planet Wisdom student conferences, log on to planetwisdom.com.
True Talk, 800 AM, KPDQ, Portland.
With SRN News, I'm Rich Thomason in Washington. Vice President Cheney says the UN has a choice. It can be effective or irrelevant. He says it all depends on how the international community responds to the challenge posed by Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein. As for the U.S. response,
history has often called on Americans to defend our freedoms and to defeat some of the gravest threats humanity has ever known. We have accepted that duty once again because we know the cause is just.
But Democratic Senator Edward Kennedy is not convinced. He contends the administration has failed to make the case for a unilateral move on Iraq. Isidore's legacy is water, lots of it. The remnants of Tropical Storm Isidore swept into parts of the Midwest today with heavy rains after swamping communities across the Southeast. President Bush is standing up to the Senate Democrats, who he says are trying to smother the new Homeland Security Department in a thick blanket of red tape.
I don't need a giant, and when I say I, it's not only me, it's other presidents. Don't need a thick book of regulations trying to micromanage the Department of Homeland Security. That's not what we need.
And one of Mr. Bush's judicial nominees, Miguel Estrada, assures senators he would be an impartial decision maker on the District of Columbia Court of Appeals.
Estrada is hoping to become the first Hispanic on that court, which has often been a stepping stone to the Supreme Court. He told the Senate Judiciary Committee that his job as a judge is to listen to each case with an open mind. The Democratic-controlled panel has rejected two other appeals court nominees on party-line votes.
SRN's Andrea Mikus, the finance ministers of the Western Hemisphere meeting in Washington, D.C., promising to work harder to bolster growth in Latin America. On Wall Street, the Dow down 295. This is SRN News.
This is Albert Moeller with today's Salem Radio Commentary. On September 22nd, California Governor Gray Davis signed a bill allowing the use of embryonic stem cells for research. His press secretary said the legislation would put out a welcome sign to stem cell researchers nationwide. The author of the bill, State Senator Deborah Ortiz, admitted that it would allow for the destruction of living human embryos for the sake of research. Respect for the sacredness of human life is what led President Bush to limit embryonic stem cell research at the national level. When human embryos are destroyed in the name of medical progress, human life is tragically devalued. With the passage of this bill, California has stepped out on an ethical limb. This reminds us that we desperately need federal legislation to cut it off. California's new bill should serve as a wake-up call for the nation. I'm Albert Moeller.
We always appreciate
appreciate your support of our advertising sponsors, and one of our longtime sponsors is the Price is Right Discount Store. I'd like to ask you to make a special point to go into the Price is Right this week, but only if you're looking for great merchandise at bargain prices. The Price is Right is a wholesale closeout store, so you're sure to find something you need at a price that's, well, just right. Everything from pantyhose, just 99 cents a pair, to tarps, tools, clothes, household items, greeting cards, and candles, even milk for $1.89 a gallon. Stop by, tell them Mary sent you, and that you appreciate the fact that they sponsor this show. Carl, the owner, is so nice, he said he'd give everyone who mentioned this ad a free pair of pantyhose with purchase. Every time I stop into the Price is Right, I always leave with a great, huge bag of cool stuff. So do me a favor, stop by the Price is Right at 12th and Division in Portland. They're open Monday through Friday from 9 to 6 and Saturday till 4. The Price is Right, and tell them Mary sent you.
How'd you like to polish off the morning newspaper in 30 seconds?
Pete Bissonette goes through books at over 100,000 words a minute with the amazing photo reading system.
Photo reading is fast, faster than speed reading. I'll show you how you can mentally photograph pages at a time. So whether it's books, magazines, or even technical information, you'll absorb it as fast as you can turn the pages and remember it for years.
Try photo reading risk-free. 1-800-591-4275. 1-800-591-4275.
Just to the right of Attila the Hun, Mary Sherrod, True Talk 800 AM.
Can one person make a difference in the life of an inmate? You bet she can. Welcome back. I'm Mary Sherrod. You're listening to True Talk 800 AM. My next guest, is joining us by cell phone from Mississippi, and that is because Tropical Storm Isidore has caused her to have to evacuate her home. But this is the kind of woman not to be deterred by a tropical storm, neither by any of the situations or the circumstances that would preclude her from being a prison advocate. She's caused quite a storm herself down in Mississippi. She's a third-grade school teacher. Her name is Tracy Ann Metz, and I'll add another name there, Frierson. She took the name of an inmate. Why? Well, her story is remarkable. Tracy Ann, first of all, how are you?
Hi, Mary. I'm fine. We have pretty weather today.
But you have no home?
Well, I'm sure the home is still intact, but some of the area was flooded due to the weather, and so I had to run to Jackson. So I'm in Jackson, and as soon as, you know, I hear it's okay, then I can go home and see if my home is still there.
Oh, bless your heart. Well, I doubly appreciate your being with us this afternoon. Tell me a little bit about how a third-grade school teacher turned around becoming a prison advocate and wound up taking the name of an inmate.
Mary, let me tell you, I started out with more or less like a prison, a ministry for these inmates. Members of our church were writing to inmates, and I said, I can do that, you know. And I started writing. I guess I had about three at that time, inmates that I could write to. And one of them was John Frierson. And as it turned out, I found out that this group of men, their due process rights were violated, and they were just more or less moved to a part of the prison and locked down without any representation or, you know, and I was just horrified at the conditions. Over the summer, I found out that John, who normally weighs about 200 pounds, he has asthma. And I saw the documentation where he tried to, request medication and a fan, and he was denied, and he went down to 164 pounds in 2 months.
Mm.
So, it moved me, just the things that I found out, you know, it moved me, and I just tried to, you know, I thought, what can I do? I'm just an elementary school teacher. And I looked for agencies, you know, to see if they could help. And I didn't find anybody. And I said, this is unreal. I can't find anybody, to help these inmates. So I started writing letters and asking my congressman, are you aware of these conditions? Is there anything you can do? And do you know that, I guess I wrote for 6 months, and when I started knocking on the doors of the congressmen, then our Mississippi Department of Corrections, MDOC, then they came to me and said, can we help you? You know, by then I was just, you know, I had already done all this research and had all these questions, and I realized what they had done. They didn't bother to ask me, you know, what can I do for you, until I went to my congressman.
Now, why did you come to take John's last name?
Well, that is part of, you know, when I started calling the offices with MDOC and saying, you know, can you help this inmate? Is there anything you can do? They completely ignored me. And, you know, I found out by, you know, asking around my neighborhood and finding other families that had inmates incarcerated. Family members seemed to, they would listen to family members. So I went through an attorney, and I had my last name changed to the inmate's last name. And then when I, you know, then when I said, this is Tracy Fireson, you know, I got, you know, I couldn't believe, you know, that they would talk to me, you know, when a week earlier I said, this is Tracy Metz, and they totally ignored me. So, you know, I literally did everything that I could think of to get my questions answered.
That is astounding. That is such a selfless, generous move. I don't know what to say. I mean, this is just an incredible example of what one person is willing to do, and it's just so rare.
Well, Mary, you know, I really didn't do that much. I just was touched. We have 30,000 inmates in the state of Mississippi, and there is nobody here at all that I know of, and I have been on the phone, you know, in many situations, you know, trying to find somebody who represents, rights for inmates. And let me say this, because I called before the storm hit, and I found out the MDOC has a set of policies, and the inmates know it. They receive a book with these policies in it, but the public is not permitted to have a handbook to know what the policies are. And that would include family members. You know, family members have no idea what policies the inmates have to abide by. And I found that kind of strange that, the MDOC does not have to answer to the federal department. They don't have to answer to anybody. They literally can do anything they want and get away with it. Mary, I have a good example of that. You know, through my research and my investigation, and, you know, just I'm just a teacher, and I just started asking questions. You know, I'm not a lawyer. You know, I don't have, you know, more than one degree. So, you know, I'm not anybody special, but I just ask questions.
No, I disagree. You are somebody special, Tracy. Go ahead.
Well, let me tell you what I found out, and this completely appalled me. Our commissioner over the whole MDOC program, Chris Epps, during the time that he was superintendent, beat an inmate and left him for dead. And the name of the inmate was Larry Floyd. And, I wrote to our governor. I said, did you know this? You know, why would we hire somebody over the entire prison system who was prosecuted for beating an inmate and leaving him for dead? And I also found out that he got off because he made a deal with the inmate, but the other officers involved are serving time at the federal pen. And, you know, to me, that's a red flag that something's not right. There's too much control over these men's lives, you know, by a system that has the public doesn't know what's going on. And so, you know, that just, sometimes I face brick walls and I don't know what to do. You know, there's agencies like Prison Legal News that have a subscription, and sometimes that gives you insight to what to kind of points you in a direction. But it's just been an experience to find this out and, you know, not have any answers.
Tell me about your inmate, the inmate whose name you took. How is he doing?
John Fireson. Well, the last letter I received from him, he told me that an officer by the name of Collins had threatened to come in the cell and beat him up. And I called, just the same as before. I made phone calls. I said, help. I called the governor's office. I said, help. I'm concerned about this. I called Chris S. And I said, I'm concerned about this. And what they said to me, they said, we get these kind of calls all the time. Well, you know what? It happens all the time. You've got officers that go in and beat these inmates up. And nothing is said. They're not fired, and they need to be fired for even threatening an inmate.
Before we let you go, because I know you're on your cell phone, tell me real quick what you would say to people who, like you, never thought they'd ever wind up as a prison advocate.
If someone like me, just an elementary school teacher, can do this, if the people out there would just please, find an inmate and write to them, because that means a lot to them. It means everything. They're just sitting in a confined cell, and these are not, there may be some bad people in incarcerated, but not all of them are bad. And if the people out in across the nation would just find an inmate and write to them, it would mean a lot. It would change their lives.
I have a feeling you're going to hear, when all is said and done, well done, good and faithful servant. You did a wonderful thing, and I appreciate your encouragement. Hopefully your story will encourage other people to get involved in this as well. Take care, and I hope you're back in your home nice and dry and safe and sound before too long.
Well, I hope it helps, Mary. I really do. Thank you.
Take care. God bless you.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Incredible story. Incredible story. Incredible woman. Okie doke. We're going to break and then come back and talk to another woman with another story. Stay with us here on True Talk 800 AM. I'm Mary Sarrett.
Last year, Northwest Medical Teams provided aid and Christian compassion to more than 2 million people, helpless children in overcrowded orphanages, families ravaged by war and earthquakes, hurting people here at home and abroad.
You can be a part of this local effort to change the world by attending Northwest Medical Team's Doors of Hope Banquet October 5th at the Portland Expo Center. Join the celebration with True Talk 800 AM and recording artist Debbie Boone and TV personality Grant Goody for an inspiring evening. Call Northwest Medical Teams today for tickets. It's only $40 and includes a free ticket to the Home and Garden Show at the Portland Expo. Call 503-624-1000 for tickets. That's 624-1000.
Don't forget to experience the life-changing work of Northwest Medical Teams at Windows of Need, Doors of Hope, a free multi-sensory exhibit running October 2nd through 8th only at the Portland Expo Center.
Your home for the True Talk Story Hour with Odyssey and Focus on the Family Radio Theater. Saturday nights at 7 on True Talk 800 AM.
The Women of Faith Conference is coming to town.
It's going to be sensational. I love Women of Faith. It's fun and it's okay to laugh. And I love speakers.
You have got to be at this conference. You'll be encouraged, you'll be strengthened, you'll be renewed.
All right, come on now.
It's emotional.
It spoke to my heart.
Refresh your spirit with some of America's best-known Christian speakers and thousands of other women.
I connect with other women and the music.
We are rocking in the stands.
This place is wonderful.
You will love being here.
You feel so secure, so loved.
Sign up now.
Come on, girlfriend.
Register today by calling 1-888-49-FAITH or go online at womenoffaith.com.
Sign up now. What are you sitting there for?
Women of Faith will be at Portland's Rose Garden October 25th and 26th. Call 1-888-49-FAITH to register or visit womenoffaith.com for more information.
Defying Description Daily. Mary Sterrett. True Talk. 800 AM.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Mary Sterrett. You're listening to True Talk 800 AM. Trying to practice what we preach here, and all week long we've talked about the situation that a lot of female inmates are enduring here in Oregon and obviously around the country as well. There are incidences of custodial rape, there's medical neglect, the food is bad, male issues, all kinds of different things. But today I wanted to focus on what we can do, what some people have done to actually make things better and to bring, to shed some light on what the situations are and then to bring that to the attention of the media and to the public. Joining us now is the director of the National Hepatitis C Prison Coalition based in Eugene. Her name is Phyllis Beck, and she tells us that there are an estimated 4,000 or more men and women prisoners in Oregon with hepatitis C, and only a fraction are getting any treatment for that. So we're so glad to have you here this afternoon.
Yes, hi, Mary. Thanks for having me on.
Why is there a necessity for an organization called the National Hepatitis C Prison Coalition?
Well, I thought I would start off by letting you know a little bit about hepatitis C. Currently, there are 4 million people infected in the United States, and 2 million incarcerated prisoners, and 40 to 60% of those prisoners are infected with hepatitis C. And the reason why they're infected is because of IV drug use a lot of the time. Many of the prisoners have a history of IV drug use, and that's the reason why it's so prevalent. It's the real problem. What we try to do is we try to help educate the prisoners. We started going into the prisons and set up workshops, and there was little education, and nothing was really being done on hepatitis C, and that's what we're finding not only here in Oregon, but nationally. And
we basically have a growing problem of this in our state's prison population and nationally. It's just now coming into focus. What happens to someone who's diagnosed with this, and then again, what kind of treatment can they expect once they're incarcerated?
Well, a lot of the times they aren't even told that they're infected. We're finding that sometimes the prisoners find out that they're infected when they're transferred and another doctor looks over their medical charts and the doctor raises the issue of them being infected with hepatitis C and they've never been told. A lot of the prisons aren't really even testing prisoners for hepatitis C because they feel that if they test prisoners, then they will have to treat. So they don't test and they don't educate. The reason why they don't really want the prisoners educated is because if they find out what's really wrong with them, then there may be lawsuits and them wanting to have treatment for this disease. This is a deadly virus that can eventually. It could cause their death. It's a virus that attacks the liver. Even though 20 to 30% of people infected with hepatitis C will go on to develop cirrhosis, this number increases to 60% if they have a history of alcohol or drug abuse. And the Department of Corrections downplays the seriousness of the virus from this 20 to 30% theory. But we're finding more and more prisoners who are being released with cirrhosis or close to cirrhosis as a result of not being treated or being educated, and many of them are literally just left to die with cirrhosis inside of the prison.
Just playing devil's advocate here, can we expect the state, can we expect the taxpayers to pay for treatment for a disease that one incurred in the commission of what, number one, is a crime, and that's drug use, which I don't agree with, but nevertheless, can we say, all right, abuse your body, go to prison, and then we've got to pay for your care? Is that right?
Well, the courts ruled on the Eighth Amendment, which actually guarantees prisoners to be entitled to adequate health care, defined as health care meeting community standards. And it's true that many of the prisoners have made mistakes, serious mistakes, to end up where they are. But to let a human being, die from a treatable disease is just uncomprehensible. There's And they end up paying more. Actually, taxpayers end up paying more if they're not treated right away. If they let it go into cirrhosis, it's much more costly to take care of a prisoner with cirrhosis than it is just with the therapy. And the therapy is expensive, but it's much more expensive for liver transplants or for cirrhotic patients.
Are they actually getting to the point where they would consider a liver transplant for an inmate?
Well, we haven't gotten to that point yet, but there have been, just recently, there was a prisoner who won the right to have a pre-transplant evaluation, and unfortunately he died shortly after he won.
So how many would you say, roughly, what percentage of those prisoners in Oregon who have hepatitis C, what percentage are getting treatment?
Well, there was a study done just recently. Out of the 11,000 prisoners that we have incarcerated in Oregon, there's about 3,300 infected. Last year, there was only one individual out of the 3,300 prisoners who were being treated. And
Wait a second.
Yeah.
Got to be something wrong with that. You got 3,300 inmates who are infected with hepatitis C, and one is receiving treatment?
One was receiving treatment, correct. There recently has been a lawsuit, and the prisoners, the 10 prisoners who are litigants of the lawsuits, a few of them are being treated, but that's the extent of it.
That's unbelievable. So what are the symptoms?
Well, the problem is with hepatitis C is that often there aren't any symptoms. It just lingers on and on, decade after decade, and you can have the disease for 20, 30 years before it can really start causing problems. What's really important is that many of the doctors inside of the prison, they're not really educated. They're not only not educating the prisoners or treating them, the doctors don't really know how to really take care of them or to find out what stage of the disease they're in. I mean, they first need to find out what stage of the disease they're in by having a biopsy.
Now, is that something that's just prohibitively expensive and that's why they're not doing it?
No, they're not really. Actually, biopsies really aren't that expensive to do. It's true that we can't treat all of the prisoners in the United States, but we feel that if the prisoners who are going to be released within 2 to 5 years, we feel that they can be treated on the outside. If they're taken care of properly while they're inside prison, then when they're released, then they can go on to get treatment. But the ones who are doing more than a couple of years and who are really doing time, these prisoners need to be having biopsies to find out if they're close to cirrhosis, so that they can catch this disease before it's too late. We just recently went to the legislature, actually last year, appeared twice, and actually won the right for the one individual that I was speaking of who had cirrhosis, the beginning stages of cirrhosis, and they finally gave him treatment, and he's now virus-free.
Mm.
And
so now here's this one guy who winds up being singled out because he had someone to advocate for him. Does this not set a precedent for the rest of the thousands of inmates who are infected?
Well, actually, it did. We have recently got guidelines set up now, but the only problem is that in most of the states, they set up these guidelines, but they put up roadblocks. They make it very difficult for the prisoner to complete the guidelines, or if the prisoner does qualify for treatment, and if he really is serious and has proven himself to be a good candidate for therapy, they either transfer him or make it very difficult for the prisoner to receive treatment.
So they figure that it's just going to be too much trouble. The inmate is more than likely not to have somebody advocating for him. So if they have it on the books nobody can really enforce it.
That's right, yes. Mm. And in some cases, they just come right out and tell us, do what you have to do. Go ahead and sue.
Mm.
It's really a big problem. But it's not only a problem for the prisoners. It's a problem for the community. These prisoners need to be educated on how not to spread the virus. The prisoners that write me, I receive 20 to 30 letters daily, and they're asking for education. They want to be educated on this disease. Many times when they do go to prison, if they're lucky enough to get tested, the DOC doesn't really even, here they've been told that they have a life-threatening disease, and with little education at all. So they're wanting to know how not to spread it to their family members. Or if their family members have been at risk, that they want to be educated about this.
Phyllis, can you stay with us for a few more minutes? I wanted to get your take on how people become involved, how, for instance, you became passionate about this and how people can get involved and maybe take that first step in some kind of prison advocacy.
Okay.
All righty. Phyllis Speck is our guest. She's the director of the National Hepatitis C Prison Coalition based in Eugene. We'll take a break and then come back here on True Talk 800. I'm Mary Sarah. We have more True Talk on the way. At True Talk, we want to welcome Debbie Boone and Grant Goody to the Northwest Medical Team's Doors of Hope Banquet. That's October 5th. Come along and celebrate the work of Northwest Medical Team, which provides Christian compassion and aid to more than 2 million people every year. Call 503-624-1000 to make your reservation today for the Doors of Hope Banquet. That's 503-624-1000.
If you're looking to buy or sell a home, opportunity is knocking. Just listen to this hot opportunity from the KPDQ Real Estate Network.
This is Andrea Johnson of Kingdom Properties. Thinking about buying real estate? I'm an accredited buyer's representative. I have professional experience and the ethical commitment to represent your best interests every step of the way. I will help you find the right home at the right price by making sure you are the first to know about the new listings, even those hard-to-find foreclosures. I will help with the paperwork and negotiate on your behalf. Call today while the rates are still low. Andrea Johnson of Kingdom Properties at 503-888-SOLD. That's 503-888-7653.
For more information, contact us agent direct or visit kpdq.com for a complete listing of homes on the network. Buyers and sellers, the KPDQ Real Estate Network is your source for realtors with integrity.
True Talk. Listen for the Downtown Bible Class, weekday mornings at 6 on True Talk 800 AM.
The new novel that reveals covert mission secrets is now available at Christian Supply. Oliver North has just released the first of a three-novel series called Mission Compromise from Brodman & Holman Publishing. Only Oliver North can incorporate real-world events and people into his storylines. Now, Mission Compromise takes you behind the scenes to the top-secret White House National Security Council. You'll meet fictional character Major Peter J. Newman, a U.S. Marine assigned to eliminate top terrorist leaders in the Middle East. When a top official tips off the intended targets, including Osama bin Laden, everyone on the mission is killed except for Major Newman. This fictional character is based on the actual top secret job that Oliver North once held. Mission Compromise is a novel you just won't be able to put down. Come to Christian Supply today and be one of the first to get your copy of Mission Compromise. It'll be the book everyone will be talking about. Great reading at great prices. Now at Christian Supply. Pour the goodness in your life.
An equal opportunity offender. Mary Sterrett. True Talk, 800 AM.
We're finding a lot of people this week who have made it a point in their lives to make the least of us important. Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Mary Sarrett. You're listening to True Talk 800 AM. And right now we're talking with Phyllis Beck. She is the director of the National Hepatitis C Prison Coalition, which is based in Eugene, telling us about this terrible problem that out of the 11,000 inmates in the state of Oregon, 3,300 of them have been diagnosed with hepatitis C, and only one of them has gotten treatment. Phyllis, how did you get passionate about bringing this to light?
Well, I was diagnosed with hepatitis C myself about 5 years ago and started support group in the Hepatitis C Awareness Project here in Eugene, Oregon, and started receiving a number of letters from prisoners. And once I started reading their letters, it was just unbelievable that they weren't receiving any kind of education. We decided that we would go to the legislature and try to bring awareness on this issue. Just slowly but surely, we made more contacts within the legislature, and we now actually have meetings set up where we're meeting with the Department of Corrections every other month at the state capitol, where we all sit down and we talk about these issues. So there has been some progress made here in Oregon, but not the kind of progress that there has been progress where there have been guidelines set up. Unfortunately, a lot of the guidelines, they look good on paper. But just being able to get the DOC to the table is at least a step in the right direction, but we have a real long way to go.
I read that only one state, Colorado, performs any kind of routine screening for hepatitis C.
There are other states that have routine screening. Actually, they do screen for hepatitis C here in Oregon, but it's kind of a real vague screening. It's not the kind of follow-up that we really want. But there is screening in some states. But not in all of them. Less than more.
Looking at medical conditions, just generally in prisons, what are you finding as far as the quality of medical care?
It's terrible. It's unbelievable. Take for instance with hepatitis C. You have what's called hemochromatosis. You have iron buildup. All these other conditions that can actually cause the hepatitis C to go into cirrhosis very rapidly. Many of these things are happening to prisoners. I've seen prisoners come up to me with all sorts of medical conditions other than hepatitis C that they're not getting cured for. It's really a big problem. The roadblocks that are involved and just the misery and the suffering alone. It's not a place to get sick.
What is the state mandate as far as medical care?
What is the state mandate? Well, there's the Eighth Amendment. It's just the Eighth Amendment. The amendment is, I don't know of any other, they pretty much do what they... What
that
they,
says that they should, the standard of medical care should be what would be available in the community, correct?
Right, community standards.
Community standards. Now, are we talking about the community of... the incarcerated or the community at large?
At large.
Well, then obviously somebody's not paying attention to the Eighth Amendment, are they?
No, not at all.
So if you're not out there advocating, who really is? Who's really getting in there, getting their hands dirty and saying, hey, something's got to change here?
Well, that's the problem. A lot of people, they really don't care. They feel that prisoners have caused this on their own, and they just don't want to look at it. They don't want to look at the problem. But it's really important that they do, because what goes on inside of the prisons not only affects the prisoners, but it affects us, and we need to really get involved. We're our brother's keepers, and again, we need to, these are prisoners who have made mistakes, but they're paying for their mistakes, and most of them will be coming back into the prison, and we just really need to really become involved.
You're looking at a cost, roughly, there's this one... According to the statistics there, they said that a year's worth of treatment costs about $10,000 per inmate. Other states, they're estimating as high as $18,000 per inmate. Again, we go back to taxpayers saying, hey, wait a second, why should that burden be on me?
Well, the cost will be, again, they try to use the cost as a deterrent, but, you know, we're not talking about all of the prisoners who are infected with hepatitis C be treated. There are many prisoners who just really aren't good candidates, but for those prisoners who are candidates, they should be able to have the treatment just like any other person on the outside. If they're using drugs inside prison or having tattoos, which is another way that it's spread inside of the prison, is by tattooing. But if they're actively using IV drugs or not really willing to make lifestyle changes, which is one of the criteria inside prison, then, you know, they may not be good candidates for the treatment. But it'll be less costly if we can treat those prisoners while they're inside prison than if they go into cirrhosis.
What about women inmates? Just how do they stack up statistically with this disease?
Actually, the women prisoners have a high infection rate, and they're running neck and neck right with the men. They're not really receiving adequate care or treatment either, both male and female.
Going back to what you said about how not all of the inmates who are infected are good candidates for treatment, I read a study where in a Rhode Island prison system that only 31 inmates out of the 3,000 that were infected would actually be good candidates. So there are a lot of people, I mean, there's just a very small number of people out of a huge number of people who really are going to be worthy of discussion here.
Well, there would probably be more, but they're making the standards so hard, the guidelines so difficult. They're making them more difficult than the guidelines are out on the street. Like inside prison, your ALT levels have to be at a certain elevation, three times elevated in some cases.
Well, so if somebody's shooting drugs, do we really want to spend that money on them? I guess it's a question.
Well, actually, the NIH you know, it's a controversial issue, but actually, the NIH says that should not be the people who are using IV drugs should be allowed to at least be candidates for therapy.
If you continue the risky behavior and then we're supposed to pop for 10 to 18 grand per person, you can see why taxpayers might say, hey, wait a second now, I can understand, but now you're asking, a lot.
Well, yes, but what we're mainly talking about as far as treatment goes are the individuals who are candidates for therapy.
Correct.
And who aren't using IV drugs.
Tell me about some of the letters you get, Phyllis, from people who talk about not only hepatitis C, but other medical neglect situations.
There have been some instances where even the legislature had to go into prisons where things such as letting individuals just die in their cells while they were screaming out, later to go in and see their cells look like a slaughterhouse. One legislator had recently wrote from the reports that he had received, and the only medicine that was given was Maalox. And these are individuals who are dying from hemorrhaging, and so the only treatment that they got was Maalox, which is really kind of a standard thing in prisons. They'll give you Maalox for just about everything.
So what can we do?
Well, write to legislators and don't be so biased towards prisoners. Understand that these are human beings too. to, that they have made mistakes, and that everyone is entitled to at least a humane treatment. They really are not given humane treatment. They're left to die often. They're suffering in pain, many of them, and aren't given adequate pain relief or medical care. Write your legislators and let them know that you want these prisoners educated on hepatitis C, so that when they do come back out in the community, they'll know not how to spread the virus. We want these prisoners coming back out into the community better individuals, and they want to be better individuals too. I go inside of these prisons, and we have workshops set up now so that we can start educating here in Oregon, which is another breakthrough that I forgot to mention. And these prisoners are many of them are seriously wanting, are seriously changing their lives. And if we could just change our views on prisoners and just be open to that
So basically, write to your representatives, your state representatives, and your state senators, and don't write off the inmates. Phyllis, do you have contact information for your organization you want to give out?
Yes, sure. We do have, we just recently got a national toll-free number for prisoners who have just been released back into the community.
Mm-hmm.
We'll help them get on the right track as far as getting the right kind of care, and also help them with Medicaid. This is national. The toll-free number is 1-866-HEP-INFO. And our number is with the Hepatitis C Awareness Project, but there is also the National Hepatitis C Prison Coalition. And our number is area code 541-607-5725.
Phyllis, thanks for your work. Thanks for being here this afternoon. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
Take care. Okay. Bye-bye. We'll take a break and then come back here on True Talk 800 AM. If you want to weigh in, love to hear from you this afternoon. Our 800 number is 1-800-845-2162. 1-800-845-2162 or 503-233-2703, 233-2703 or 1-800-845-2162. You're listening to True Talk 800 AM. I'm Mary Sterrett. Back in a moment. Noticed a change in the weather recently? Rain in the Northwest means greener grass, more water for the watershed, more water for the little woodland creatures. All these things are true and important, but let me add on one more thing to that list. It's a secret Vancouver has been taking advantage of for the last 17 years whenever it starts to rain at the end of the summer. Golden Leisure is having their end of summer sale. Enormous savings on summer items like 50% off on all picnic items, 50% off on all barbecue supplies, and 25% off on all wind chimes and more. It's also time to start thinking about making your pool safe for the winter. Golden Leisure will set you up with all the BioGuard products that you'll need. Bring a water sample from your pool or spa and Golden Leisure will test it for free using their high-tech BioGuard computer system. They'll print out an evaluation of your water and let you know exactly which BioGuard products you'll need. Don't wait until you see the ice forming on your water this year. Go to Golden Leisure today. In Vancouver, take I-205 to Mill Plain East, right on Tuckloff, next to the Chevron. Golden Leisure.
True Talk, your station for the Michael Medved Show. Weekdays 4 till 7 on True Talk 800 AM.
My name is Tom, and I met my wife, Becky, on eHarmony.com.
eHarmony changed my life because I never would have met Tom otherwise.
Hi, I'm Dr. Neil Clark Warren, founder of eHarmony.com. You may have heard Tom and Becky interviewed on Focus on the Family recently. They're just one of several hundred couples who have found their soulmate through eHarmony. What they have is so special. It's so hard to find the right person to marry and then build a lasting relationship. At eHarmony.com, we're committed to coming alongside you, and we can make it so much easier to fall in love for the rest of your life. Here's what I want you to do. Go to eHarmony.com and log on today. We will give you a free, eye-opening personality profile right there online. And then we'll be well on our way to helping you like Tom and Becky. fall in love for all the right reasons.
I found the absolute dream of my life on eHarmony.com.
Charter member of the vast right-wing conspiracy, Mary Sarris, True Talk 800 AM.
Winter came, summer so cold. All you got to do is call, and I'll be there, yeah, yeah, yeah. You got a friend.
Welcome back. You're listening to True Talk 800 AM. I'm Mary Starrett, and we're wrapping up a week of looking at some of the really desperate conditions in the women's facility here in Oregon. We're talking about women inmates. We've talked about medical neglect. We've talked about rape of inmates by Department of Corrections employees. And I do want to point out that the District Attorney's Office in Marion County, the silence coming out of that office is deafening. We've called and we've told them about one particular case, which we are pretty sure they're covering up. One inmate who shared her very, very traumatic story with us. She's out of prison, but in 1997, she was raped repeatedly at the Oregon Women's Correctional Center. I called the district attorney's office, gave them this man's name, know that he is still employed by the Department of Corrections, and the folks, Steve Dingle, at the Marion County District Attorney's Office, has ignored every request for an investigation or information into this. How many people do you think are in prison today simply on the hearsay, simply on what their victim had to say? And here we have proof that it looks like the Marion County District Attorney's Office is covering up for the Department of Corrections and the fact that not only wasn't this man prosecuted, but he's now working for the Department of Corrections, continues to work down in Salem. So if you want to call the District Attorney's Office, here's their number, 503-588-5222. 588-5222. We're just talking about hepatitis C and how there are about 3,000 inmates in the state of Oregon who are suffering with that. And our last guest just told us only one of them got treatment. Let's go to your calls and Bob in Portland. Hello, Bob.
Hi, Mary. Great week you've had.
Hey, thanks so much.
I have a buddy that contracted hep C probably through drug use before he came to know the Lord. Not really sure how. And he found out when his wife wanted him to get some more insurance. And so he went on the interferon treatments, and it just made him so sick he had to stop. And he wasn't on them very long at all. And so I started doing some research on hep C and what could deal with it. And what we came across time after time after time was silymarin or milk thistle and another acid, it's called alpha lipoic acid. And these two components, one is an herb, and I don't know what you classify the other as, but the two of them go in and just absolutely, well, it's 3 years later. He's been off the treatment for 3 years. I think he did the treatment for about a year.
Mm-hmm.
And he just had a test recently, and they cannot detect it in his system.
Excellent. I'm going to pass that on. Appreciate it, Bob. Thanks so much.
Absolutely needs to be passed on.
Milk thistle and alpha lipoic acid. Okay,
yeah.
Easy for you to say. I'm going to write that down if anybody does call after that. Appreciate the call.
Okay,
thanks
bye-bye.
So much. Thank you. Let's go to Betty. Hi, Betty. Thanks for calling.
Well, hi, Mary. You've surely been a busy lady.
I sure have been.
Getting this program ready and then having all these interesting guests.
Thank you.
Information you've gathered. I'm calling because if you mentioned an address to write to or to call you to find out where I could write to one of these ladies.
All right. Let me give you that information, okay?
All right.
I'm going to let you go and grab a pen and copy this stuff down, okay?
All right. I'll hang up.
All right. Thanks.
Go to the radio. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Betty. For those who are interested in finding out about how to get involved with these ministries, let me tell you that there is a contact at Coffee Creek Correctional Facility. There is a woman named Lori Humbert. She's the volunteer coordinator. You can call Lori at this number, 503-570-6803. Call Lori at Coffee Creek and simply say, I would like to get involved. Can you plug me in with one of these ministries? We have a listing. Many, many different ministries are involved there. You can get involved. For instance, let me just tell you, they have, see, who's going over there? You've got a Women's Christian Fellowship. You've got Seventh-day Adventists. You've got Catholic Services. You have all kinds of worship services, praise chapel, grace assemblies. That's going to do it. A lot of people, Women's Aglow, a lot of Christian ministries over there. You can get plugged into one of them. Lots of that going on. Or you can simply call and talk to Lori at 503-570-6803, 570-6803, and just say, look, I don't know where to begin, but there's somebody there that you're aware of who's lonely, who needs a visit, who might need a letter, and I'd love to get some information. If you do not get any satisfaction there, I want you to call me or email me at MarySS@kpdq.com, and I will get you directly tied into someone who does need a visit. And I can tell you, having gone to the prison here in Wilsonville, also going down to the one in Salem, I've met some wonderful people. And I've also met some people who kind of want to tighten the screws on these gals. And it's quite disturbing. Also, I want to give you a website. Go to westernprisonproject.org. westernprisonproject.org. Find out about what's going on. There is an organization called Women Embracing Freedom Together. I was hoping to get a coordinator on today from that organization, but never did connect with her, and she never did call us, and I don't know what happened there. But the group is called Women Embracing Freedom Together. It's a nonprofit agency. It's composed of Portland State University students, community members who are promoting healing and social change in the lives of Oregon's incarcerated women and their children. They have lots of projects. They have transitional housing. They help these women, because you know what happens. When these gals get out of prison, they get to the bus stop, and that's where they leave them. No money, no skills, no clothes, no house, nowhere to go. So fortunately for this group, Women Embracing Freedom Together, this West group, they're actually giving them a transitional house. And they don't say, here's the cutoff date, you've got to be out. What they do is they let them stay there as long as possible. On October 1st, WEF is going to open their first transitional housing program for former inmates and their children. This is going to be a place for 7 women to take control of their lives after they are released from Coffee Creek. The data, the Oregon Department of Corrections data, shows that some of the ways that women fail is because they're basically set up to fail once they leave the prison walls. Half of the women are being held on drug charges, and the few rehab programs that exist are grossly inadequate. So if you can connect with a woman before she gets out, think about what that would be like for you to actually be there when she gets out and to be able to say, hey, you know what, why don't you come to our church? Or why don't you meet me for coffee? Or do you need some clothes? Or perhaps I can help you out some way, somehow. Think about what an enormous impact you would have on somebody's life. That's big. That's major stuff. And again, I just encourage you. There's so many groups. There's so much going on out there. If you could just pretty much plug in. And again, the volunteer coordinator at Coffee Creek is Lori Humbert. Her number is 570-6803. Lots of groups. If you don't get anywhere, please do contact me, because I know a lot of people who are going to be able to give you access to these different groups. They need clothes for the women. They need furniture for their houses. They need household articles. They need money. They need people to mentor. There's just an awful lot that needs to be done. If you look at our prison system, you know, again, I'm very surprised at myself for even coming to this conclusion, because I would have heard information like this in the past and said, look, these are bad people who've done bad things. We need to throw them into prison and throw away the key. And I have a different perspective now. A totally different perspective. I had one email from a listener who said, just look at the barbarity of how prisoners in Oregon are treated. And look at the fact that in Sweden, for instance, the average prison sentence is 3 months. And that includes the average sentence for murder for 6 years. So for most offenses, people are getting sentences of 1 or 2 months in Sweden. In Oregon, the average prisoner serves 37 months. That's 12 times longer than in Sweden. And so, using that as a guideline, maybe we ought to rethink Measure 11, because there are a lot of people in prison who don't need to be in prison. Pray for these women every single day, and also for some guidance on how you can get involved. I hope this has helped somehow. I know I don't plan on dropping the ball, and I hope you won't either. We'll be back again with our regular program starting on Monday at 2. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend.